This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson. What do you think of when you think about Brazil? Do you think of the host of the 2016 Summer Olympics?
Welcome to the world-famous Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, for the opening ceremony of the Games of the 31st Olympiad.
Or, if not the Olympics, do you think of the host of the 2014 FIFA World Cup?
Stuffed it! Beat it! Lift up for Brazil!
Neymar has got a goal. Or maybe your mind wanders back even further to 2001, when Brazil was predicted to become one of the world's top economies by 2050.
Brazil, Russia, India, and China. BRIC for short. But there's nothing short about the list of goals and ambitions these countries laid out in their second annual summit. Joining me now to talk about this is our...
The Olympics, the World Cup, one of the most exciting emerging markets in the world. Brazil was once heralded as Latin America's crown jewel. But then it was hit with a 1-2 punch of a massive corruption scandal and a stunning economic collapse. Now, unemployment in Brazil is at 13%. The country has 60,000 homicides per year on average, and its current president boasts of an approval rating of just 3%. All of that is backdrop to Brazil's upcoming presidential elections. Far-right populist Jair Bolsonaro is facing off against a leftist, his rival, Fernando Haddad, on Sunday. And the lead-up to the election has already been packed with drama, including Bolsonaro's near-fatal stabbing last month. Now, we're here to talk about what the election means for Brazil and how what happens in Brazil will reverberate across both Americas. Monica DeBole is here. She is senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. She's also director of Latin American Studies at Johns Hopkins University. And she's here with me in the studio. Monica, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Winter is editor-in-chief of America's Quarterly and the vice president for policy at the America's Society and the Council of the Americas. He joins us over Skype from Sao Paulo in Brazil. Brian, thanks for being here.
Hello, Todd. Happy to be with you.
Good to talk to you. And Paulo Sotero is director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center. He's also with us here in the studio. Paulo, thanks to you for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, Brian, you're the one in Sao Paulo, so let me give you honors here to start. Let's start with the nitty-gritty. Who is Jair Bolsonaro? Most Americans might not be familiar with him.
And Jair Bolsonaro is a retired army captain who has been in Congress for nearly three decades now. But despite having sat in Congress for so much time, he shows open loathing for the legislative body. I mean, he has said over the years numerous times that Congress is dysfunctional and it should be closed. He's also advocated torture of his political of leftists and other political opponents. And, you know, that message for a long time was regarded as marginalized here. I mean, he was not a popular figure. But in the last couple of years, because of this historic economic crisis that you mentioned, Todd, those messages are resonating a lot more with people than they did in the past. And now here we are with this presidential election coming up on Sunday. And he has a 10-point lead in polls over his nearest rival. It looks like there will be a runoff vote, which would be on October 28th. And that one's a close call right now between him and the guy he's likely to face, leftist Fernando Haddad. But it's just so strange for me to be here because I lived in Brazil for 5 years. And it was not that long ago. I was here from 2010 to 2015. And this seemed like just such a strong democracy. It seemed like a place that had come so far since the period of last military rule from 1964. In 1985. But being here this week and talking to people, I mean, there's a lot of people who are ready to vote for Bolsonaro, even if it does mean a return to, you know, the more authoritarian ways of the past here.
Brian, we're going to work on your Skype line a little bit. We'll get that cleaned up and we'll definitely come back to you. Monica, what about Fernando Haddad in contrast? He's not as fiery as Jair Bolsonaro, of course. Bolsonaro has been described by some as Trumpian or maybe more akin to Duterte in the Philippines, likes to wave guns around, say that drug dealers should be shot or threatens to summarily execute them. What about his opponent, Fernando? Haddad. What do we know about him?
So what we know about him is that he's not an organic member of the Workers' Party, the PT. He's someone who's sort of an outsider when you look at the composition of the PT.
Far left, though?
He's not. He's a moderate. But the leadership of the Workers' Party of the PT currently is very radicalized. So it's very different from the time when former President Lula was in government, for example, from 2003 to 2010, when the party really did take this sort of center-left stance. So the party itself now is very much hard left. The candidate, though, isn't. That being said, the real big problem in Brazil at the moment is that there is a lot of anti-PT, anti-worker party sentiment. So a lot of the vote that has been migrating to far-right extremist Bolsonaro is this anti-PT vote. So these elections are very strange because they have become elections about not who necessarily voters actually want to see as president, but about who voters do not want to see as president.
We're going to talk about corruption. We're going to talk about graft. We're going to talk about a failing economy, because all of those things play in, I think, to the idea that voters know who they don't want. They don't want the people who were taking billions of dollars in bribes, which has been a major problem. We're going to talk all about that. Paulo, let me turn to you. What about turnout in this election? Brazil has compulsory voting. I don't know if that means that they get to 100%, but people do come out to the polls. What's the mood like among Brazilians? Are they excited to sweep out the corrupt, dirty politicians and get Bolsonaro in there, or are they beaten down and weary?
I think they are more weary than decisive in terms of going there and changing things. The electorate is very divided. Normally, 80% of the voters show up. We may have less of a proportion this time. One important feature here is how many voters will spoil their vote, will leave it blank, will cancel the vote, because that is important. Whoever gets 50% of the valid votes is elected president. There is an outside chance that could happen this Sunday with Bolsonaro winning. More likely, according to the latest polls, is that we go to a runoff. But the mood, people are angry, people are frustrated, people feel betrayed by the political class in Brazil. Regardless if they are from the left, from the right, or from the center, people feel absolutely fed up with politics, with politicians, and there is no alternative, because there is not going to be a military coup in Brazil, and we are going to find our way through politics.
Now, Brian, I think we have your Skype line nice and clean now. Bolsonaro has a history of violent rhetoric. He's been photographed waving machine guns around. As I mentioned, he likes to fantasize about his opponents or drug dealers or thieves being shot. But there's been some actual violence in this campaign. Last month, Jair Bolsonaro was actually stabbed at a campaign rally. What happened there, and what's happened since? How has it affected his standing among voters in Brazil?
In a way, I mean, it was, I think all of us were pained to see political violence at that level. And it was personally awful for Bolsonaro. He almost died by his own account. And those are the doctors that treated him. Politically, I think it's fair to say that it was helpful, because the plan by the more centrist candidates in this race was to spend these last couple weeks attacking Bolsonaro as much as possible on TV ads and elsewhere. And because of this attack against him, and because of the resulting public sympathy, they really had to tone down, or in some cases eliminate totally, their attacks. It's also allowed Bolsonaro to stay fairly quiet and not articulate his plans, what he would do if he gets elected, as much as he otherwise would have had to. I mean, there's a huge, probably the biggest presidential debate is scheduled for tonight. He's not going to take place. He'll be the only candidate who's not there, because he says that, you know, his doctor has ordered him to rest. And it's basically created a situation of huge uncertainty. We don't really know what kind of leader Bolsonaro would be if elected. But he continues to grow in polls, perhaps as a result, because, again, as Monica was saying, the fear of the leftist government, of the Workers' Party coming back, is so strong that even people who kind of are disgusted by some of his political rhetoric in the past against, or even recently, against women and gays and blacks and other minorities, are just so terrified of the other side coming in that they're willing to throw their support behind him.
Well, we've been hearing about just that from 1A listeners. Millwright writes, the center-left Workers' Party ruined Brazil as a nation. Take note, America. Aaron writes to us, how is Brazil going to solve their problems by electing a person who believes the police should be able to kill criminals in the street without a trial or any kind of justice? Isn't that a license for the police to become an enforcement force for whoever's in charge? And Barlenin writes, before we get to the implication of Bolsonaro's popularity, could we talk about the causes? It might start with justifiably increasing levels of distrust in political institutions. If people decide they can't trust traditional politicians and policies, they try non-traditional politicians and policies. And Monica, that's a good point. That sounds familiar to me as an American voter.
Yeah, that is a very good point. And yes, it does resonate. The one thing to be said here is that Bolsonaro actually has been in the Brazilian Congress for a decade. So as far as being an anti-establishment politician goes, he's not quite that, but he's because he's been within the system for a very long time. That said, he has very much been sort of a marginal, you know, congressperson. His views, because they have been so outlandish, have really not been, you know, as we said before, have not been taken with any sort of more serious aspect to it. But I just want to bring up one point to really underscore who Bolsonaro is. He did give an interview for the New York Times in 1993. And at that time, he positioned himself as a staunch defender of Peru's Fujimori, who at the time was closing Congress and installing an authoritarian government. And Bolsonaro defended that in a famous New York Times interview. Fujimori has just been, his pardon has just been lifted, and he's going back to jail. So this is just so we give some context here for what this represents for Latin America.
All right, let me take just a moment to remind you. I'm Todd Zwillick, and you're listening to 1A. Paulo, what about former Brazilian President Lula da Silva? He's in prison on corruption charges, but was still running for president until last month when he was literally told by a tribunal that he couldn't run while facing a prison sentence for corruption. Is he still having any impact on the race, either directly or as an avatar for corrupt politicians?
Yes, he has had an important role. Obviously, Haddad is running because of Lula said so. Lula anointed Haddad. Problem is that if we go to a runoff, it will be interesting what will happen with Haddad. He has to stay very close to Lula until Sunday, and then he has to separate himself completely from the former president, establish his own personality in this race. It's a very difficult thing to do. He was mayor of São Paulo, minister of education, but as Monica said, he is a moderate guy, is a university professor. He will have a tremendous difficulty moving towards the center, because if he does that, he risks alienating the PT support bases. And so he could, by trying to gain more support, lose the support that he for sure enjoys.
Now, Monica, I need a brief little Portuguese lesson here. Translate car wash. How do I say that in Brazilian?
So in Portuguese, it's lava jato.
Lava jato. Now, yeah. Every time you click on an article about Brazil to read about politics, you hear this term, lava jato. Car wash. This is not a country that's devoted to keeping cars clean on the street. What does it mean? Why is it so important to this discussion we're having right now?
Well, just to give the context of why the operation, the corruption probe, was called Lava Jato or car wash, is that the entire The sort of needle and the thread of corruption all started in a gas station where there were some very strange things going on. And then the federal police, which is Brazil's FBI, decided to investigate that particular gas station, which had a car wash machine. And then they found that actually there was lots of money, illegal money flowing through this particular gas station. So they called the whole operation the car wash operation. They were not expecting to unravel a situation in the sense that they have unraveled it. So they were not expecting things to become so dramatic and to ultimately reach important business leaders in Brazil, but also, very importantly, practically the entire political class.
Now, you're talking about massive corporation, hundreds of millions of dollars in bribes and corruption. I mean, you said dozens. I think I read 50, like a third or a half of Brazil's prominent politicians implicated in taking dirty money.
Exactly.
It's huge.
It's huge. And to give a context of, you know, just how big it is, it's about the entire political class. Not only that, it's also about Latin America as a whole, because if we look at the car wash operation and how far reaching it has been, it has toppled the president in Peru in 2017, who was somehow allegedly connected to the bribing schemes that were going on. It has also affected other politicians in places like Colombia and Argentina, even in Costa Rica. So it's really sort of an all-engulfing corruption probe that has not only overtaken Brazil, but has overtaken a large chunk of Latin America as well.
And has echoes in its politics today and in this election, and we're going to get to that. You know, I have to say, you mentioned, I did not know that the car wash started with a real actual car wash. I thought it was just a metaphor for, you know, dirty money and cleaning off dirty things. It sounds like Breaking Bad. I mean, they had a car wash that laundered millions for a drug operation, and that was supposed to be fiction. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that with my guest, more on Brazil's elections, more on the car wash, and whether far-right candidate Jair Bolsonaro is really, as some people call him, the Trump of the tropics. He's earned that nickname. Does he deserve it? We're back in a minute on 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Stay close.
Pra toda a vida, eu não me separo de você, mulher. Pensa com beleza, um dia me quiser. Se não mega cena eu vencer, fico com você, fico com você. Se no Barcelona eu vou camisa 10.
Welcome back to 1A. It's Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the political climate in Brazil heading up to this weekend's presidential election. What's happening in Brazil might seem familiar to Americans in the wake of the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. My guests are Monica DeBol, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Brian Winter is the editor-in-chief of America's Quarterly and the vice president for policy at the America Society and the Council of the Americas. And Paulo Sotero is director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center. And you have been sending us your messages, 1A listeners. Drew emails, I was in Northwest Brazil last month staying with a gay black friend. He is all in for Jair Bolsonaro. People are so fed up after the car wash scandal, they will go for anything that isn't part of the Workers' Party. Now, Monica, before the break, you were telling us about car wash, the actual car wash and the broad offensive corruption scandal. Is it over? Have all of the, I don't want to mix metaphors, but have all the cars been overturned and opened up and cleaned out in car wash?
Well, it is winding down. So the bulk of it has already occurred. But let me go back in time just a little bit, because it is important to put into context two things. The most important findings of Lava Jato or of car wash were in 2015 and 2016. And at that time, President Dilma Rousseff of the Workers' Party was Brazil's leader. She had been reelected in 2014 and she was president at the time. She was impeached in 2016. And part of the reason for her impeachment, there were many moving parts here, but One of the moving parts was the fact that, A, she had lost control of her coalition, and her coalition had a number of other political parties that were implicated in the car wash findings, in the car wash probe, in the plea bargains, and everything else that started to come out publicly in terms of this particular investigation. She never did anything to actually stop the investigation, which was really a positive thing. But that was one of the things that actually led to her downfall, because the impeachment that she suffered was really very much politically motivated by the need that some of these political parties in her coalition had to try to at least slow Lavajato, if not stop it altogether. And this is a very important element when we look at the degree of polarization that currently exists in Brazil, because the people who still defend the Workers' Party and still defend the PT, they go back to the impeachment of Rousseff as one major argument for why, you know, things, the Workers' Party has been, let's say, unfairly treated in the way that that things have gone down.
Matt writes to us on email, I had a Brazilian friend years back who called his home country the greatest country that never was, meaning that Brazil has had such riches in terms of natural resources, but it has not had the government or the leadership to make it a competitor with the United States. Paulo, Matt makes a good point. Brazil was celebrated as the rising star, not only of Latin America, but of emerging economies around the world compared to India and China. We mentioned it at the top. Now, horrible recession, horrible corruption. What happened in Brazil? Where was the Brazil that hosted the Olympics and was on the way up?
Well, I think Brazil believed too much in its own magic, that it's a country predestined to be great, and forgot to do the necessary things you do in order to build that country. One of the major betrayals is precisely the Workers' Party, a party that was led by a man born in poverty, built this very successful party on initially ethics in politics. There is this sense after Brazil basically riding a wonderful wave in international economics, big producer of commodities, had a wonderful moment, poverty was reduced, and that is what led to this impression that Brazil was unstoppable. Then reality hit. Lula made a very bad choice in his successor. Lava Jato came and the magic disappeared. What we have today is a consequence, and this is what I think potentially positive in all of this. We cannot blame others for our problems. This crisis was produced in Brazil by Brazilians. And another thing that is potentially positive is the fact that the state in Brazil is basically broke and we have run out of money. All that dream now has ended, and the nightmare has to be confronted from a reality basis where the government has run out of money. We have to adjust the economy. The measures necessary to do that are very tough and unpopular, and none of the candidates have explained exactly how they plan to confront the issues.
Now, Brian Winter, you're with us from Brazil. I read an article, Brian, that you recently wrote where you were asked by a friend, I think, to sum up Brazil in two sentences. And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. Your answer, ultimately, your conclusion was too many BS privileges for the elite, not enough good leaders. What exactly did you mean by that terse conclusion?
Well, if you look around right now at the field of candidates, there's one thing that all Brazilians agree on, which is that they find the candidates running for president to be uninspiring. The vast majority of people here, as we've said during the program, feel like they're voting against somebody rather than voting for somebody. And the consequence of that is just, I mean, it's stunning for somebody who lived here during that era when things were going really well, which you've mentioned, Todd. The degree of cynicism, the degree of disbelief that people have in their system of government is just amazing. And, you know, it's part of a global trend. I mean, we've seen this happen in places like Turkey and Hungary and elsewhere around the world. But this democratic recession, as some people have called it, really is especially strong here. And that makes sense because Brazil has taken a bigger beating in terms of its economy and in terms of the reputation of its politicians because of this corruption scandal than virtually any other Western democracy in recent years. There was a poll by the Pew Research Center in 2017 that found that just 8% of Brazilians say representative democracy is a very good form of government. That was the lowest of 38 countries that that you surveyed. And that just shows you the climate here right now and the reason why many people fear that Bolsonaro, if elected, would basically have carte blanche to take a, you know, hard right turn that could involve the curtailment of civil liberties and other things. I in my time this week, I've had meetings with people from civil society and the press and others who, you know, these are serious people, not prone to panic or anything like that, who are talking openly about the possibility of exile. And this just blew me away. I mean, it's a Brazil that I've read about in history books, you know, going back to previous periods of military rule. 1964 was the last coup. I thought that that was a Brazil that had been firmly relegated to the history books. And, you know, maybe they are, maybe it is getting a little bit melodramatic in some quarters, but there are real fears and people are scared right now.
Well, Brian, you mentioned a statistic that was disturbing. Only 8% of Brazilians say that representative democracy is the best form of government now. And right to the point, Efrain Ramirez emails us, why are we so concerned about the right versus the left in Brazil? Bolsonaro is another Duterte. He's an Erdogan, a Putin, a Kim, a Maduro. All these dictator wannabes who are being resurrected in Europe and Asia and now in Latin America, all of them are loathed for their corruption, their narcissism, and a total lack of democracy. And Paulo, in the United States, it's been said more than once that Bolsonaro is a Brazilian version, a Brazilian analog of President Donald Trump. They're both right wing. They're both populists. Are these comparisons apt, do you think?
I don't think so. I think President Trump is quite sophisticated compared to Bolsonaro.
Really?
Really.
Sophisticated.
Sophisticated. But he has obviously dealt with businesses in the United States. He has history in Wall Street, in the hotel business. Bolsonaro has none of that. He has zero sophistication. He has never run a thing in his life. He has been in Congress for 27 years. There is one law to his name, and he says, in the face of this enormous economic problem Brazil has, he said already more than once, I know nothing about the economy. And he has one economist that is a liberal saying that we are going to privatize state companies, we are going to reform this and that. We know for sure that we will not be going, we are not going to be that, do that, because Congress will block any such attempt. Nothing will change in the upcoming Brazilian Congress, also being elected this Sunday. So you have a polarized presidential election with a kind of normal election for governors, for congressmen, where this very exhausted political system in Brazil has not renewed itself, and things are probably going to stay stagnant.
I'm Todd Zwillick, and you're listening to 1A. Monica DeBoll, Paulo is describing a situation, and our emailers, our listeners, are describing a situation, too, where, at least in terms of the presidential election, voters may be saying, the system is so rotten, so corrupt, I'm so tired of it, I don't care if there's a candidate who says he knows nothing, just burn it down. It sounds like an awful state of affairs.
It is an awful state of affairs, and it's certainly something. I mean, when you vote, we've seen this all over the place. When you vote with anger, when you vote with vengeance, when you vote with these very negative sentiments, this tends to create situations that later become that you later regret. And I fear that Brazil is going straight into that, is running straight into that trap. A comment on Bolsonaro. I agree with Paulo. I think the Trump comparisons, they are superficial at best. I mean, when you look at who Bolsonaro really is, he is a product of the old Brazilian military establishment. That's who he is. Those are the ranks that he comes from. So when Brian, for example, referred to fears of, you know, people not having the same civil liberties that they used to have, and, you know, this overall complacency about civil liberties that a lot of the electorate seems to be having just because they want to kick things down and they want to, you know, change the situation entirely. This is very dangerous, because this could really put Brazil in a trap that's very, very difficult to emerge on. And finally, just one other comment on something that Paulo said. Paulo said that you know, Bolsonaro is very unsophisticated. I would say I agree. And not only that, he has extremely simple solutions for extremely complex problems. So to give an example, Brazil is one of the most violent countries in the world. You mentioned, Todd, the homicide rate that we have in cities and in major cities. One of the ways that Bolsonaro has proposed to tackle this problem was to allow everyone to hold firearms. Imagine what kind of situation that would create.
Well, I almost can. Brian, we got a text from a listener from the 1A Text Club. Just take a brief minute and react to it, if you would. What is the impact of Brazil being such a young democracy in all of this? Do they have enough checks and balances to keep Bolsonaro in check? Brian Winter?
No. I mean... Institutions in some ways have strengthened, and I have certainly written a lot in the last couple of years about my admiration for the judicial sector, for example, and the way that it's prosecuted the car wash case. But the situation now in 2018 is so desperate, and people are just so fed up with crime in particular. And the cry for law and order and the hope that Bolsonaro would be able to restore that is very strong, and it's very much in line with previous periods of Brazilian history. I mean, you know, places like Rio de Janeiro are full of monuments to military power, the old fort at the end of Copacabana Beach, the old war ministry building downtown. And I was there also this week, and it was a reminder that more often than not in Brazilian history, it's the military that has held or shared power. This democratic period of the last 30 years is the longest that Brazil has ever had. And so in some respects, what people are asking for right now is a return back to the way things were, when, you know, the military was there to help guarantee order and you know, this idea that they would go into poorer areas of Brazilian cities and shoot suspected drug dealers. As much as that horrifies people like us on this panel, polls indicate, and my conversations over the last week indicate, that that is precisely what many, if not most, Brazilians want from their next government. It makes me really sad.
It's a disturbing and a worrisome vision of Brazil's immediate future. We will see what happens this weekend in the first round of the presidential elections and in potential runoffs after that. And before we go, I'm about to thank our guests, but I want to read a comment from CN, who writes on our website, "I think most of the world deserves a few decades of totalitarian rule, the United States included. We have obviously forgotten the lessons of World War II and the Cold War. There are too many simpletons who want to hear simple answers to complex problems, and especially that someone else is to blame for their failings. You have a cruddy job? Immigrants. Culture isn't the same as you fondly remember? Muslims. Other countries rising to power? That's globalism. Perish the thought that we might be responsible for our own failures." And Paulo, I think that goes to your thought before, that Brazilians are responsible for the fate of their country, and many of them are loath to take responsibility for that. I want to thank all of you 1A listeners who wrote in to help this conversation. And I want to thank my guest, Paulo Sotero, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Paulo, thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
Monica DeBole, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. She's also the director of Latin America Studies at Johns Hopkins. Monica, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Brian Winter in Sao Paulo, editor-in-chief of America's Quarterly and the vice president for policy at the America Society and the Council of the Americas. Brian, thanks so much for joining us on that Skype line, especially since you're on the ground there in Brazil. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Well, this show was produced by Paige Osborne. To learn more about Paige and the rest of the team here at 1A, visit the website, the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It is distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson. Don't worry, he's back tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A. Burguesinha, 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 burguesinha. Só no filé.